Rural Focus.
It's Troy with Rural Focus, Wednesday in the factory, which means we catch up with the editor of Farm Weekly to find out and see what we can read in tomorrow's edition. Darren O'Day, good morning.
Good morning, Troy. And it's probably a little bit cold in the factory this morning, but it's rained as well, so we shouldn't complain too much.
Yeah, winter's here with a bang, mate.
Exactly. One week into it, and I'm already complaining. We need the rain.
Absolutely. Hey, mate, a story in the Farm Weekly tomorrow is agriculture being left behind in the race to recruit staff.
Yeah, we sort of have a bit of a deep dive into this and, you know, how obviously it does struggle to attract young blood, which is people are asking, are governments and industry doing enough to get young people to sort of consider agriculture as a career? We spoke to one farm consultant, Ashley Herbert, and he believes the reason ag struggles to have the same allure as mining is we don't sort of promote ourselves or our pay opportunities enough. And he said young people were attracted to industries at the moment that make a lot of money, and obviously mining is one of those that has a lot of money. It's got that vibrancy around it. And he sort of said, you know, he said trying to work out ways that agriculture can do the same, because obviously mining has marketed itself well to youth, you know, and he sort of went on to say, you know, it's accessible to anybody with limited qualifications. You know, they can basically call up a mining hotline in a lot of cases, have a look around, see what's there, get a job within a month or so. And some of the data we look at says, you know, people working in mine, you know, there's more in mining for people under 35 than there is in agriculture. And obviously, you know, you don't have to go too far in the bush to know somebody who was in their regional town that's now working in mining. We also spoke to the Reserve Bank of Australia research, James Bishop, and he sort of said because of the mining boom, many young people had abandoned or deferred their plans to go and study TAFE or get a trade. Said they're choosing to go and do a high-paid mining job, and he talks about the reasons on that side of things. And also spoke to Lee Webster from Two Working Oz in the wheat belt there, and said, you know, farm enterprises just don't have the scope of the big mining companies to create these marketing campaigns. You know, a singular farm might weigh in one or two people, or a bigger farm, more people, but they just don't have the resources to compete with the mining companies. She said, you know, like mining companies can go and spend $100,000 on an advertising campaign, visit all the schools, and get people that way, whereas we just can't compare to mining. And WA Farmers President John Hassell, he sort of agreed, and he said, you know, mining had done an extremely good job in marketing, but he said there were some great advocates in agriculture, and that there's some great young people in ag as well that were coming through and doing some really good things. And he even suggested that maybe we even have a look at the education department and including the more agriculture in the curriculum, just to see if we could get something happening that way. You know, and the story also looks at, you know, if you're work for a farm, you know, you can drive a sprayer, a road train, a header, you know, whatever. You don't actually get a certificate for any of those machines. Whereas if you're in mining, if you just drove a dump truck or a water cart, you would actually be certified in those sort of things. So, you know, ag's sort of struggling with that as well, because obviously, you know, mining does promote everything you do, you get a certificate for. Ag, you just go and jump in the truck and off you go.
All right.
So that's in tomorrow's paper.
All right. And Esperance business, mate, is struggling because of a gas supply chain?
Yeah, the state government's switched off the natural gas pipeline to Esperance. And that sort of created a bit of a hassle for some people down there, including Neil Wandell. He runs Esperance Quality Grain, and he said now that the online gas is not available, he's sort of having trouble to dry and clean his grain, and he's only using a small batch dryer at the moment rather than a large scale dryer that was coupled up to the natural gas supply. And as a result, you know, processing last season's grain, which was a big season, has been slowed by the process. And he said he had only about a week's work to go with the big dryer, but because of the switch off, that's now been stretched out to a couple of months, and then he's got staff and extra costs on that, so it's becoming a bit of a nightmare for him. So what will happen in the future is he'll have to rely on LPG gas that will be trucked in bottles from, I think, Bunbury, he said. That's quite an expensive operation. And he said, you know, the disconnect between government and business in this has really been highlighted, and he just labels it a bureaucratic nightmare. You know, the government said the transition to, you know, a new power station in the area would be a significant milestone for the town and create cheaper energy prices for households and businesses. But to many, you know, that sort of... That's blatantly not the case. And Neil Wandell said, you know, for him it's not. You know, and he sort of pleaded with the government even to leave the natural gas line on for, a couple more weeks, pardon me, so we could sort of finish off his thing. Yeah. And that didn't happen. And he said it's now costing between $110,000 and $120,000 to switch over. And the government will only probably cover about $50,000 of that. So he's about $70,000 out of pocket. Yeah, and it's just not a good situation. No. But that natural gas line is now switched off. And you've got the reasoning behind the move and why the government's doing it explained in this week's edition.
All right. And also in tomorrow's Farm Weekly, mate, some roundtable discussions looking at the challenges of getting regional women back into the workforce.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, there's a lot of people in regional WA that want to go back to work, but there's quite a lot of issues as to why they can't. And probably one of them is they've got kids. You know, what do they do with the children when they want to go back to work? You know, that's been a challenge for a long time. And as we get less childcare facilities in regional areas, it's going to be an even bigger problem in the future. And it became the topic of this roundtable discussion by grain growers last month. And they looked at some of the challenges, including around getting childcare situated, including getting suitably trained staff, the ability to attract staff and retain them and teach them in the remote areas, the infrastructure and facilities where they work. Where to house them, and maybe even looking at appropriate subsidies and incentives to keep them there. They went and had a look at, highlighted the in-home care settings. So even if a person is found and was actually going to be based at the farm, like a live-in care or whatever, they said, the additional costs of accommodation and vehicle costs, all those sort of things aren't met by government funding. Could be an issue, particularly if you're in a remote area where you might be 100 k's out of town. And they sort of said, just as, the regions are failing to attract childcare workers, the roundtable also highlighted that they were losing existing childcare facilities and the workforce. There was also a bit of a discussion about the burnout that was experienced by people in the education and care provider sector, and they've cited things such as being overworked, having a lack of support, particularly in those rural settings, and limited access to professional development, which, people are leaving the issue because of that. Or if they need to go back to Perth, they won't come back. I also spoke to the Isolated Children's Parents Association's president, Alana Moller, and she said, there was a lack of accessibility and flexibility in their sectors as well. And she said there was sort of a blanket one-size-fits-all approach by the government, didn't really meet the needs of the ICPA as well. And she said, moving forward, they'd like the government to make sure that the guidelines of any childcare program aren't so strict around the rules, and that could address things like cost of living, lower wages, provision of government housing, maybe even changing the tax structures for not-for-profit community childcare centres. Just things that we can look at getting, more people into childcare in regional WA and keeping them there, and then more people in regional WA can actually go and find employment in town if they wanted to do that.
All right, so those stories and more we can read tomorrow in the Farm Weekly when it hits your local newsagents. Editor Darren O'Day, always nice to chat, mate. Keep warm, mate. Keep those UGG boots on, and we'll chat to you again next week.
Speak in 7 days, Troy.